It's such a pleasure for me to be here tonight, and I could not tear myself away from the tea. For those of you who were not in the tea, do it the next time. It's such a treat. And it didn't end until the session was supposed to start, so we got getting a little bit of a late start. I adore LaLeach League conferences. How many of you have attended? No, let's do it a different way, because I see so many familiar faces. How many of you have not ever heard me talk about SUC before? Ooh, a lot. Ooh, first time, yeah. Wow, okay. Let me see a show of hands. How many of you are IBCLC, IBCLCs? How many are not? About half. Okay. How many of you are not LaLeach League leaders? About a quarter. How many of you are physicians? A few. How many of you are RNs? Quite a few. How many of you are midwives? A couple. How many of you, I'm glad you're here. How many of you are PTs, OTs, or speech therapists? Okay, a couple of us. Other healthcare providers? Doulas, whatever, others. And childbirth educators, how many? Maybe 20. And how many just plain old educators, wonderful teachers? Again, a few. Okay, good. Just gives me an idea of who's here. It is vitally important for all of us concerned about the breastfeeding dyad to work together. Each of us has a different but important role to play for the mother, the breastfeeding mother and baby. We could turn down the lights a little bit now. Let me take just a moment and get on one of my soapboxes. I have lots of them. Most mothers don't need professional help with breastfeeding. They need mother-to-mother support. They need a league leader or a peer counselor. But when breastfeeding is not going well, they should be referred fairly quickly to someone who's trained to help clinically so they don't stop breastfeeding or continue trying to breastfeed and get into deeper trouble. League leaders are not capitalized, underlined, not trained to function clinically. And most healthcare professionals are not trained in clinical breastfeeding skills, capital N-O-T also, unfortunately. We welcome those who want to be trained thoroughly. The more people we have supporting breastfeeding who have knowledge and experience, the better. But if you're not thoroughly trained to function clinically, please refer. And IBLCs and healthcare professionals, please refer mothers back to LaLeach League. Back to their peer counselors. We too often leave them in limbo. They need the ongoing support and ongoing education that league or peer counselors provide. They need the professional help for just a very brief period of time. I want to acknowledge that there are many ways usually to solve a problem. Sometimes one way is better than another. Of course, I always have my opinion. Sometimes there are just two equally effective ways with the same problem, but the way I like best is the one I'm familiar with. And I'll try to tell you and differentiate where it's something I'm familiar with and I have an opinion, or it's just the way I do it. Often, the path that seems the best, as I said, is the one we're familiar with. The trick is in knowing when the new way is really the better way, and then making that the familiar way. As I talk tonight, if you hear problems that you solve in a different way, please share those with me after the lecture. I really do want to hear. I have worked in a variety of clinical settings, and I've seen babies of every racial, ethnic, and economic group. But the majority that we see at the Lactation Institute are Caucasian and middle class. So that's what you're going to see in the slides tonight, just because I happen to pick out three cases from the Lactation Institute to share with you. Three or four, we'll see where we get. While I have discovered some small differences between various groups of people, and I mean really small, most of the information holds true across people after all. Breastfeeding is breastfeeding is breastfeeding is breastfeeding. Sort of like a rose is a rose. I want to spend our time tonight sharing a few cases and deriving assessment principles related to problematic SUC from the cases. I'm not going to follow the outline that you have in your syllabus exactly in order, but we'll cover all the topic, all of the things mentioned in the outline as I proceed with the lecture, as I present the cases. So, case number one. Where's my clicker? S.G. was a first-time mother whose labor was induced at 35 weeks gestation because her water broke and she had not started labor after 24 hours. Baby D. was born vaginally with Apgars of 7 and 9. He was 5 pounds 11 ounces at birth. The mother went home at 2 days postpartum and the baby stayed for another couple of days. During the separation, the hospital used bottles for feedings. Naturally. It was a struggle for her to get him to latch onto the breast, so for the next 4 weeks, he was mostly bottle-fed. She sought advice from her pediatrician and a couple of lactation consultants. Her pediatrician actually recommended that she take fenugreek tea to increase her milk supply. She also tried a variety of nipples, including a standard newborn nipple, a Nook nipple, which baby D couldn't get any milk out of. Let's look. And a munchkin nipple, which is what he was still using. Now, I hate to start this lecture. I thought about it, and I thought, God, you can't start with the second slide being all about nipples, rubber things. But that's just where it fell in the talk, so forgive me. In any case, if I have to go to a rubber nipple, a latex or silicone nipple, my first choice is still a Nook, and here's why. If you can even find the real orthodontic nipples anymore. Most of them are now just not really orthodontic nipples. But here's why. A real orthodontic nipple is difficult for a baby with sucking problems. All the other nipples, they can get milk out of. But this baby couldn't get milk out of this orthodontic nipple. So the mother went on to find another and another and another, which is typical. And what that says to me is, red flag, this baby's got sucking problems. If they can drink from an orthodontic nipple, he comes sit on the floor. If they can drink from an orthodontic nipple, they can breastfeed. That's the key. Mother had also tried a nipple shield unsuccessfully, and somebody had given her a syringe, not a periodontal syringe, but a syringe to use at breast. So this is that clear for you? It looks fuzzy to me, but I don't know if it's my angle. Can somebody adjust the slides? You'll see that the baby doesn't have the entire nipple in his mouth. He's just got the nubbin of the nipple, and he needs to have the areolar tissue of the nipple in his mouth. And it's no wonder the babies don't take the whole thing in, because the advertisements all say, do it this way. They know they want you bottle feeding your baby. This is how it's correct. And the nipple should be turned, the way they say it should be turned in the baby's mouth is the wrong way. It should be turned opposite of that. Okay? And I'd ask you put down cameras, please. Thank you. And there are 20 zillion syringes out there. Breastfeeding is breastfeeding is breastfeeding, but a syringe is not a syringe is not a syringe. They're all different kinds, and the only one that I have found thus far that works really well for teaching suck is a periodontal syringe. I have no investment in the company, never have, never even talked to headquarters, but it's the only one that I have found so far that works. So people are constantly giving a variety of syringes to mothers thinking that they're equal, and they're not equal. Now, this baby was 5 weeks early, as I said earlier, and so it's important for us when we work with a baby that's 35-weeker to adjust the age. So when I first met baby D, he was 9 weeks old, but in actuality, developmentally, he was only 4 weeks old. When I first met the mother and the baby, the mother was just felt she was in despair that she would never be able to breastfeed. The mother's breasts appeared to be within normal limits, though she reported that her bra size had stayed the same through her pregnancy and when she was trying to breastfeed the baby. Now, that's a red flag again. We know that it's a red flag, but we also know from Hartman's work that there are times when the breasts grow postnatally, even though they haven't grown during the pregnancy. But hers didn't seem to grow in either case. So it certainly is something to watch, but it doesn't mean she's not going to be able to make a full milk supply. Otherwise, they looked to be within normal limits. She had Playboy-shaped upright breasts, and we'll come back to that so you see what I mean, but we've kind of labeled different shapes of breasts, and hers were the kind that we have before we have babies. That's not the mature breast that says we have wisdom. Her reeler size and nipple diameter and length were all referenced, so she had about 1 inch reeler tissue, and for those of you who do millimeters, I hope you can follow with inches, because I didn't write it all down. I usually do, and I didn't. And the nipples were about 3/8 of an inch in diameter and in length. Her nipples and the reeler tissue were shiny and pink and tender, so a yeast infection was suspected. And she reported that for the last 48 hours she'd had shooting pains in her breasts. So Lotrimin was suggested topically, and actually I didn't do the initial consult, the first two consults with her. A staff member at the Lactation Institute did the first two consults. And she did something that I don't usually do, but I thought when I read over the chart, gee, this is a really good idea. She said, try Lotrimin AF, which you can buy over the counter now, and call me in 48 hours. And if it's helping, then I'll tell you where to go from there. So she was kind of doing diagnosis by treatment. I thought that was an interesting thing to do. The color of her milk was normal, and it looked to me like baby D was doing some arching, trying to get the milk to come. You know how the babies will take the breast and go, pull halfway back across the room? Whoops. Yeah. It didn't go in the... Something is not doing this right. Come on. Let's go back. Okay. I pushed forward and it didn't do the right thing. I mean, I pushed reverse and it went forward. Okay. And if you can see, he is arching a bit. And I suspected that he was very frustrated that he wasn't getting more milk. But he was doing a fair amount of arching. So again, that was a red flag for me. The mother had tried, remember he'd had bottles for the first 4 weeks, and then she tried to exclusively breastfeed for a week. But the baby only maintained weight. He didn't gain, and so she went back to supplementing. And during this whole time, she was pumping. The baby's behavior, head, facial features, gum line, tongue, were all within normal limits. And the following varied from what we would call normal or reference in some way. I hate the word normal because there's such a wide variety of normal, and we usually use the word reference. So the baby's posture was normal at times, but at other times, as I said, he was arching, but he was able to maintain flexion. So I wasn't too worried about it, but I noted it. Respiration, he had some congestion. Research is starting to validate what we in the breastfeeding world have seen clinically for years. Breastfeeding is best protected when the mother and the baby have an unmedicated, non-problematic birth, and the baby is in the mother's arms without interference from the moment of birth on. So, the induced labor with epidural, hospitalization of the infant, separation, and bottle feeding got this baby off to a rocky start. Suck is a very complex global response that is vital to well-being. To suck normally takes 6 cranial nerves, a rich blood supply. The infant has to learn how to suck, swallow, breathe, or it will have major problems and maybe even starve to death. Suck is under brainstem control. we do a digital exam on a baby when they're sucking problems, and I really thought about, am I going to put in the basics of a digital exam in this talk? And then I thought, I'd better. There'll probably be a few who haven't ever heard this lecture before, and I'm really glad I did, since there are quite a few of you who are new to this. But, okay. First, let me tell you about this. This is a red-faced, Hakai red-faced monkey taking its mother's nipple into its mouth in spite of a full set of teeth. One of the things that happens with this particular baby was that the mother had been told that the baby was, or the mother had complained that the baby was biting. And one of the things that we hear all the time when a baby does any biting is, aha, your baby's got a tonic bite reflex. Have any of you heard that? Yes? Okay. Don't listen to it anymore. A tonic bite is an abnormal biting reflex. You cannot have a normal baby with a tonic bite. It is a strong closure of the jaw when the teeth or gums are stimulated, and once the kid has bitten down, they can't let go. As opposed to a normal bite, a bite reflex, where the baby can let go whenever they want, bite down whenever they want. A clonic bite is also an abnormal biting reflex where the muscles are spastic and they're doing this. Okay? That's, again, very different. But a developmentally normal baby cannot have a tonic or a clonic bite. So it's a diagnosis that with very, very, very rare exception should be wiped from our thoughts. Okay? But the mother had already been told, which makes the mother think, oh my gosh, maybe I've got an abnormal baby. And we've all, many of us in this room, lots of us, I see lots of mature faces, I was going to say older faces, have breastfed children and know that with a full set of teeth, just like this monkey, kids can just breastfeed beautifully. So what makes the baby bite? Well, not getting enough breast tissue in the mouth is one. And sometimes they get the back of their tongues up. Babies are oral gymnasts. They can do amazing things inside the oral cavity. And in order to hang on to that little bit of breast tissue in the mouth, especially after they've gotten used to hanging on to a rubber nipple, they clomp down on it. And that's what this baby was doing. He was also holding his tongue in a flat position. The bottle that she'd been using taught him to do that. And it was quite easy to affect change with a little bit of suck training. Just putting pressure on his tongue, look at the difference. How he then was cupping the tongue properly. Troughing the tongue properly. Want me to go back? Okay. Just a little pressure. Doesn't even have to be a lot. Okay? And he did this quite quickly. He also had sucking blisters. That's what we used to call them. They're actually, I think, calluses, kind of like the calluses we get on our toes. They're not fluid-filled usually. And it is not normal. It's a sign that there's a sucking problem. They're not flanging their lips properly. They're getting friction on their lips just like we get frictions on our toes when our shoes don't fit properly. And they get calluses. So the baby had calluses all the way across the lip. Okay? He also had, at times, not enough suction. He would slide down or fall off the breast. The vacuum formed by the baby's mouth should be strong enough that the baby will not fall off or easily be pulled off the breast. We should have to break that vacuum by sliding a finger in or pulling down a little bit on the chin. I usually slide a finger in, but they both work, and take the baby off. And this baby could be just pulled off the breast. Now, again, that was because he didn't have enough in. He didn't have the tongue troughed. He didn't have a good seal. There were all kinds of things going on that led to that. He didn't open his mouth wide enough when he latched on, but this helped with a little bit of teaching. On the breast, as I said, he was on the mother's nipples, not areolar, or just the beginning of the areolar tissue, and he would stop trying to suck after just a few sucks. I didn't hear him swallow at all. And these next two shots are amongst my favorite of all my shots. Do you think this baby is on and sucking properly? Is there anything that you think is wrong? Okay, I'm hearing a buzz. I'm going to say it again. Nah, it's fine. Okay. He's not really too far away either. I'm going to give you a clue because we're going to hurry. Look at his eyes. His eyes say it all. Don't even look at the mouth. Got to look at the whole baby. He's disinterested, isn't he? He's just waiting for the milk. She's waiting for an MER, right? A milk ejection reflex. He's just hanging out. Okay, look at the tone in his face. He's not doing anything, is he? He's not low tone, but he doesn't have tone that looks like he's sucking, does he? This was an adopted baby. Added milk, and look at the difference. Didn't pull him in, didn't change his position on the breast. All we did was add the milk. And now there's tone, and there's a glint in his eye. Okay, let me go back. Love these two shots. Okay? Got to look at the whole baby. Now, the tongue is normally, when it's in a resting posture, with normal nasal breathing, is resting on the lower, behind the lower front teeth and gum line. The base of the tongue is up near the center of the hard and soft palate. At birth, almost all of the space in the oral cavity is filled by the tongue. Well, his tongue was the right size, and he could hold it in the right position, but he got to the breast, and because of all the bottle feeding and all the confusion, he just didn't know what to do there. Any type of sucking problem is problematic for the infant. A handful of people in the breastfeeding world still exist who question whether suck problems exist at all if babies are birthed and latched correctly from moment one. I think they're living in dreamland for lots of reasons, but here are a few. First, we see so many babies who have sucking problems at the Lactation Institute. Second, there will unfortunately always be babies who have special needs, babies who have Down syndrome, cleft palates, neurologic problems, birth defects, etc. Three, how many babies in the developed world birth when the mothers have labored in their position of choice with one constant experienced support person, with access to food and drink, and birthed in their position of choice? They labor in their position of choice and they birth in their position of choice without meds. How many do you know? Three? Fourth, how many babies are then put to breast immediately without any separation from their mothers? So that they can be suctioned, prodded, poked, weighed, footprinted, blinded by eye drops, injected with vitamin K, and ID banded. Then returned to the mother, and that's just what happened to this baby. She didn't get him until half an hour after he birthed because they had to do all those important things. There are 22 bones in the skull, 34 joints and sutures, 60 muscles for suck, swallow, breathe, that move these parts. These include the tongue muscles, the muscles of mastication, the muscles of the pharynx and swallowing, and of course the muscles of breathing. A lot of stuff is going on there. It's a very complex process. And it's not a reflex. I would suggest to you it's not a reflex, even though we've all been taught that. I would suggest to you that it's better called a global response. Because a reflex is, a simple reflex is, you know, you hit your knee, and your leg goes out, and that's not even a simple reflex arc, the way we were taught in high school, at least I was, because somebody can come along and pat your shoulder while the healthcare provider is hitting your knee with a hammer, and it can interfere with the response. And if you can interfere with it at all, it's not a simple arc. Well, sucking is very complex. It's really not a reflex. It's a global response. Take a look for a second with me at these skulls, because we're going to come to one of the other problems that this little guy had, baby D had. This is an adult skull, and this is a 7-year-old and a 2.5-year-old and a fetal skull. And you can see that the 2.5 looks very much like the adult and the 7-year-old. It's the fetal skull that looks very different. And one of the things that makes it look so different is it's got a little bitty mandible. Little bitty. Now that mandible and maxilla, the maxilla's here, mandible's here, the chin, the mandible's the chin, are in a good alignment. Okay? They have good juxtaposition. And then we get a lot of growth downward and forward by 2.5 years and then more and then more. And here we see, again, this is the 7-year-old skull, the 2.5-year-old skull, and the fetal skull. You can just see from the side view, same thing. Look how much bigger the mandible is here and how much bigger it is here. Now, this little guy had a receding chin. It was quite receding. And the receding chin causes problems of attachment. We have to adjust the angle of attachment in order to compensate for the receding chin. It's something that very few people understand, so I hope all of you will go home and be messengers after tonight. So, look at the lack of juxtaposition between mandible and maxilla on this little guy. Okay? Receding chin. And here you can see good alignment of the mandible and maxilla in this cross section. Back here is the S spot, the juncture of the hard and soft palate. That's the sucking spot, or S spot. When I named that years ago, I figured if women had a G spot, babies could have an S spot. And here you see the receding chin, okay? So you don't have good juxtaposition of the mandible and the maxilla. And it can also be called an overbite or retronathic mandible. And then you have the reverse of that is the protruding chin or the underbite or the pronaphic mandible. And we see that very rarely. Okay? We see this all the time. We see it more where mothers and fathers have a British heritage than we do in populations that are from Asia, the Middle East, Africa. But if we've had intermarriages between those populations, so daddy is black and mother is white, for example, then we still see a lot of this. And since there are very few people today who are ethnically one thing, statistically, I think we're becoming a blended world, we're going to see more and more of these problems. And I think that's one of the reasons why we see so many more problems today. There are lots of reasons, but one of them, people will say to me all the time, well, how did they handle it back in the olden days when everybody breastfed? Well, everybody lived in one little village, and it was one genetic pool, and the local midwife would teach her sister who was coming up under her the tricks of the trade from that particular heritage. And so she knew how to handle receding chin in her population, for example. But when you start adding things and you get multiple things going on, then it gets more complex. Now, so I said this little baby had a receding chin, and we'll come back to that. But here we see there are lots of different shapes of palates, and we're not going to have time to go into all of them tonight. But this little baby had a bubble palate. Okay? So if this is the gum line, let's go up here. This is our reference palate. We have a nice, smooth slope up and then back down again to the S spot. Okay? Here we have the bubble palate and we get a concavity right here in the hard palate. We still have hard palate, and then we get back down here to the S-butt, and then we have soft palate. The bubble palate is the most common of the problems we see with the palate. And the receding chin is even more common than the bubble palate. So very common problems. So here we see just a palate in cross-section, and I especially want, again, to point out the S-butt here. So we've got the gum line, and we've got the rugae, and we've got the palatine raphe, the midline of the palate. And remember, the palate grows in two plates and then comes together like this. Okay, and this is all hard palate here, and then the S-spot and the soft palate and the uvula. Okay, so here we have a three-day-old baby with a nice reference, beautifully orchestrated palate. Okay, gum line, rugae, hard palate, and that right there is the S-spot. Okay? You can see the demarcation in color. So what is a bubble palate? It's a rimmed concavity in the hard palate. It's about 3/8 of an inch in diameter. Remember, mom's nipple is about 3/8 of an inch in diameter if she's got a reference nipple. And that's, from what I can tell, that's across populations. I know we need more research on that because we don't have enough numbers in some populations, but so far I'm going to make that statement. And it's about 1/4 inch deep or 0.5 centimeter deep. Okay? It's usually in the anterior hard palate. And your finger, usually women's first finger, just fits right up in there, just like the nipple does. Okay? And there are a variety of different kinds of bubbles. And we're only going to really talk about our reference bubble tonight and then baby D's variation from that. So here's our reference bubble. Again, looking at it in a different way. And baby D's was very large. Okay, so this was like baby D's bubble palate. And they can have, bubbles can have various depths and again, and various diameters. And baby D's was deep and he had a large diameter bubble also, so it was quite big, unusually, very unusually big. We don't usually see that. Okay, and it is very hard to get in there and get a really good shot of a bubble palate, but you can really see it in this babe. Okay, can you see that concavity? Okay. I wanted to just point out to you with this shot the difference between a high palate and a bubble palate. This is our reference palate right here. And high, the entire palatal dome is very high. As opposed to reference, bubble, reference. Okay? Everybody clear on that? One other palatal variation that's on your outline, just so that you know what the difference is this is a channel palate. And the babies who most often have this are babies who've been intubated. They form, their palates are very malleable when they're, especially when they're preemies, and they mold around this, the tubing that's in their mouths. And this is what it can look like. And sometimes it can cause some problems. Oh, sure. I'm not going to stop on time. I'm going to take 15 minutes extra. Sharon, so let's plan on it since I started 15 minutes late. And if people need to leave, I'll leave. But I'm going to take my full allotment of time. I'll stop then no matter where I am. Okay, and as I said before, this is from a study that one of our students did for her master's thesis, Joanne Snyder. Here we see, this is the population who we see at the Lactation Institute, and about 43% had reference palates, where the juxtaposition, in other words, the chin was off, the juxtaposition of the mandible and the maxilla was off, was the next most frequent thing we saw, and that's about 30%, about 28% were bubbles. And you can see that other things go from there. This is prominent alveolar ridge, and we'll come to that later if we have time, but you can see that's only about, I don't know, 17%, something like that. So this is the population that already had problems. Now, we can also see babies who have cleft palates, and this is a baby with a cleft of the lip and the alveolar ridge, cleft of the soft palate, and a unilateral complete cleft. Doesn't matter whether it's unilateral complete or a teeny tiny cleft. If they have it in the palate, they can't maintain a vacuum. They cannot effectively, efficiently breastfeed. They need help. If they have just a cleft of the lip or the lip in the alveolar ridge, you can seal it off, and with that little bit of extra help, they can breastfeed successfully. But these stories you've heard about babies who have clefts of the palate and that they can breastfeed without help is a myth. Okay? I'm not going to say more about that tonight. I have to do a whole talk on that next time. Frenula. The frenula of the tongue needs to be elastic enough that the baby can move its tongue in a stripping motion, okay, in order to be able to suck properly. The frenula, the lingual frenula is the frenula in the mouth that causes the most trouble for breastfeeding, although there are other frenula that can cause problems, and we'll look at that hopefully later. Okay, so baby D's birth weight was, we'll come back to frenula later too with a different case. Baby D's labial frenula was a bit tight. And again, that was a red flag for me that I had to watch to see if it was going to need to be clipped. It didn't have to be clipped, but it was borderline, and so I had to watch it. Baby D was, as I said, 5 weeks early. He weighed in at 5 pounds 11 ounces, and his current weight when I met him was 8 pounds 8 ounces. So he had weight gain. Mom had a history of allergies. If she drank milk or she ate dairy products, she got phlegmy. This is from the maternal history. Ellen, you're doing your job. Can you all see this over here also? Okay. Ellen Schell is my other half. My business partner, other half. And she is quietly sitting over here doing her job for me. Thank you, Elle. Where she's going to put up the chart so that you can see the kind of detailed history that we take. This is the maternity history, which I haven't gotten to yet, but you can see that there are lots of things on here, and this is done for every consult. And we'll go through different parts of the charting that we do with different consults. So, mom had sore nipples, and she had started taking the mini pill 3 weeks before I met her. And I said she had allergies to dairy, clearly. From the maternity history, which is up there right now, I think I covered all of it already, except that the milk came in on the fourth day postpartum. Now, that's again, for me, a red flag. And it's fairly recently become a red flag. So I'm going to share it with you. It's been a suspicion for a long time. I've had it brewing in the brain for a long time. But I now am going to make a definitive statement. If the milk hasn't come in within about 48 hours, assume trouble. It means the baby's not sucking properly, or the mother's breasts are not being drained properly because the baby's not getting there in order to be able to suck. Something's wrong. How many times do you guys think babies should breastfeed in the first 24 hours of life? Somebody's saying 12. Somebody's saying 5. Somebody's saying 8. I'm hearing a variety of things. Any of you want to guess maybe more than 12? 15, 16? Every what? Every 15 minutes? Okay, I bet you had a home birth. I knew it. Okay, I just lectured in October, had the great privilege of lecturing in Japan, and I was invited to visit Okayama Hospital as a special guest. Now, you may not know Okayama Hospital, but it is the first baby-friendly hospital worldwide. So it's a very famous hospital. And Dr. Yamanuchi was the head of the pediatrics and NICU there, and he spoke several times here at these LHLE conferences, and he was a joy to hear. So, and he's no longer alive, unfortunately, but I have very fond memories of him. In any case, so it was very special for me to be toured around this hospital. And when the head midwife took me into the postpartum rooms, there were four mothers per room. They each had a standard hospital bed, except that the baby was in bed with them. There were no cribs. There was no nursery. The babies stayed with the mothers after the birth, and they went straight to the postpartum room together. Now, this is not true in every hospital in Japan. This is Okayama Hospital. And when I went from bed to bed, each mother had a clipboard with paper and pen attached to it where she was to log every breastfeed, every time she changed a wet diaper, and every time she changed a bowel movement diaper. And I looked at the numbers that they were recording. First 24 hours of life, one baby breastfed 17 times in 24 hours, another one 21 times in 24 hours. This one had 6 wet diapers. This one had 10 wet diapers. This one had 11 wet diapers. All of them were breastfeeding many more times than what we think is normal. And guess what? The milk was in within a day or two. It's the way it's supposed to be. So it needs to be a red flag for all of us henceforth. If the term milk is not in within about 48 hours, assume there's trouble, with a capital T.
Shelley, how many of those mothers had girls and reduced
insulin? No epidurals. How many of those mothers had epidurals? None. Night and day. Of course we are. But what that means is every baby born in our typical hospitals is in trouble. That means we've got to know that and be prepared to deal with it. That's my point.
Or change the hospitals.
And change the hospitals.
Not into the hospital alone.
Try the doctors and the nurses and society and the patients. Yes, oh, I know. Okay. Instructions to the mother included that she needed to pump as often as the baby would breastfeed. And she had been pumping less than 8 times per 24 hours, so I initially pushed her up to 8. But for a baby this age, generally speaking, until they're about 3 months old, I encourage people to usually pump 12 times in 24 hours. But I left her at 8 because she was close to having a full milk supply with what she was already doing, and I figured she would go up to full with 8 times. I suggested that, and always when a mother's in trouble, I go to the classic big standard hospital-grade breast pumps. I don't futz around with anything else. Suck. How do we assess suck? And how do we suck train a baby? They're basically the same skill, to suck train or suck assess, except that with suck training, you're just doing what works with your baby. The mother is just doing what's working with her baby. And suck assess means that you've got to figure out what the baby's doing and teach the mother what she needs to do. But basic suck training, which is what I'm going to show you now, or suck assessment, is what will fix 90% of the problems, just like basic good latch-on positioning fixes 90-95% of the problems. So if you don't know anything else, stick with basic suck training or suck assessment, and you'll be in like Flynn with most cases. It looks like this needs, it's fuzzy again. Can somebody adjust it for me? So start with stroking the cheek to the lips. Once the baby has rooted, tickle the lips with your finger, stroke the lips, not the bottom lip, the lips. Why is that? Anywhere in the perioral area, like this whole area, and the baby will respond. If you go like this, the baby will go like this and find it. go like this, and the baby will go like this. Okay, so anywhere in the perioral area, you go like this, and the baby will open the mouth. This business of the bottom lip is also was based on kids who had neurologic problems, and we don't want to base what we do on kids who have problems. We want to make special therapy, treatments, whatever, for those children, but we don't want to apply what is important for those children to all children. Stroke the gums to desensitize the baby so they're used to getting used to something going into the mouth, and I usually do the bottom first, then the top. Just stroke around the gums gently, and then gently slide the finger along the palate. As you're sliding, the baby is usually sucking and drawing the finger in. After all, what do babies like to do more than anything else? They like to suck. They'll suck on your nose. They'll suck on your clothes. They'll suck on your ear. They'll suck on your elbow. They'll suck on your breast if you offer it or get it near there, whether you're lactating or not. So all we've got to do is get the finger in there, and if the baby doesn't draw it in, that's a red flag. Something's wrong. And they should draw it in all the way back to the juncture of the hard and soft palate. So you go all the way in. Now, if you're doing this, cut your fingernails, especially as you're learning. Okay, this was a mom. Actually, it was Ellen.
I had fingernails?
You did. She never does. I don't know why she did in that picture, but she did. She obviously was busy with the baby and hadn't cut them. About an inch and a half of the finger goes into the baby's mouth to get back to a reference S spot. So you're going to go all the way back to the juncture of the hard and soft palate. So this is hard palate, this is S spot, soft palate, uvula. The tongue is cupped around the finger, resting on the lower lip, covering the lower gum line so you don't feel like you're biting. And you can see that the tongue should be cupped around the finger, acting as a gasket. Okay, great gasket. And then when the baby sucks, once the breast is in the baby's mouth properly, the tip of the tongue rests on the lower lip. The anterior tongue comes up and compresses these posterior lactiferous sinuses. Then it goes down. Mid tongue comes up. It goes down. Posterior tongue comes up. And as it's coming down, milk is spurted from the breast. So that's the tongue roll. When the baby rolls its tongue properly, this is the sella turcica, or the pituitary saddle. So the pituitary is right inside the skull, but directly where this pencil is. And those bones are so malleable that as the baby sucks, it puts pressure on that pituitary, and correct hormone is excreted, or secreted, rather. Okay? So if the baby is not sucking properly, then we get growth implications and all kinds of other things. And deglutition. It's important to understand swallowing. And why it's important to understand swallowing is because one of the things that we hear the most about using a periodontal syringe is, oh my gosh, the baby might aspirate. Well, if the baby is sucking properly, the baby's not going to aspirate. So here we've got a bolus of food, and that's going to go down into the oral pharynx. And then as the tongue sucks and the posterior tongue comes up, it pulls everything up with it. So everything comes up, and the epiglottis comes up and it closes off the airway so the baby can't get liquid into its lungs. So as long as the baby can suck properly, use a correct sucking motion, then you don't have to worry about aspiration. And even if the baby is not sucking quite right but is a normal baby, they're going to block that airway. So we use a periodontal syringe, and it's what I teach people to do all the time. We get better behavior modification with a periodontal syringe than with any other tool. My goal is not to be stuck on tools. My goal is to get rid of the tools as fast as we can and let the mother and baby enjoy breastfeeding. So I want behavior modification. And the fastest way I get that is with a periodontal syringe. When another tool comes out that gives it to me faster, you better believe I'm going to switch to another tool. But right now, bracing the periodontal syringe on your finger, or if you're feeding the baby a breast, on your breast, sliding it into the corner of the baby's mouth, always the corner so you don't break the seal, about a 1/16 of an inch, so very, very, very tiny amount, goes right in the corner. Then you push the plunger just enough, give the baby a little bitty bolus, feel what the baby does, reward the baby as the baby approximates a more and more correct suck. And because you can feel what's going on, you can follow the baby's cues and you can affect change. I don't even use feeding tube devices, haven't for years, with adoptive babies, because I get a better milk supply using a periodontal syringe. With the feeding tube devices, the babies get lazy. They don't suck strongly enough. And so the mothers don't get a full milk supply. So you read in the literature that adoptive mothers don't get a full milk supply because they're using feeding tube devices. Okay, so that's what it looks like. And you see how little of it is in the corner of the baby's mouth. Almost all of it is braced on the mother's breast. And then follow the baby's cues. Okay, now another thing that we did with this baby D is we had the mother use positional variations to accommodate the receding chin. And for her, the position that worked the best in the beginning was, and it's a long name, modified semi-Fowler's position. A semi-Fowler's position, for those of you who are not nurses, is the position in a hospital bed that you get that kind of looks like the mother is a W. Okay, so she's sitting in bed, and then her knees go this way, and then her legs go down like this. So this is just in a chair, but mimicking that same kind of a position where she has scooched her bottom forward. She's got a pillow behind her back. She's got her foot on a footrest. So she's in a modified semi-Fowler's. She's not sitting straight. We're using a cuddly pillow that we have started making because somebody was making them, and they went out of business, and we needed them, so we now have them available if you want one. But in any case, and I'll show you, it fills up this space in the baby's chest, and the baby is in a straddle sit prone position. So the baby is not really totally prone, but the baby is angled also in a modified prone position. Okay? And what that does, let's see if I can explain this to you. If you've got, I know in the back it's going to be hard for you to see this. If you've got good juxtaposition of the mandible and the maxilla, can you see this in the back? Okay. You've got good juxtaposition. And you take the breast and you go in, you can go back to the S spot. Okay? But if you've got a receding chin and you go straight in, what's going to happen? The tongue is set behind the gum line, so you're not going to strip all of these terminals, we don't call them lactate for sinuses anymore, all these terminal ducts, okay, here, we're basically well on to the breast, well on to the breast here on top, but we've not got enough tissue underneath, okay? And putting the baby's head in extension in order to compensate for that makes it difficult for the baby to swallow. You've all done that exercise, I hope, where you take a drink and you put your head in extension and you try to swallow. Well, it doesn't feel any better for the baby than it does for us. In fact, we don't even put a baby into extension to resuscitate them. It can cause harm. So what we do by varying the position of the baby is allow the baby's head to be in a neutral position and still get enough of this inferior tissue here and be able to breastfeed properly. So it looks like this.
Give you Jackie. No, that's not going to do it. I need your breast. I don't even have to pull it out. Here we go. So here we've got good juxtaposition, okay?
How about if I get my hand, all right?
Okay. No, I don't want to do it with
mine. She's going to do her hand.
I've touched her breasts many times.
Okay, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Okay. Do you know what she did to me? When I was, you know, a fairly new friend of hers. We were walking out of my house, and she, out in the front of the house, and she insisted I needed to learn how to hand express. So she'd been talking to me about this for a long time, but now we're out in public, and she says, "Here, this is how you do it." The whole neighborhood. So I have a funny reputation. Okay, so here we've got...
Okay.
I'm not going to be able to go on with this lecture, guys. I'm crying. All right. So we've got good juxtaposition, okay? Like this. And when we go on, we go straight on and we get good tissue. We get all the equal amount of tissue, superior and inferior. But if we've got a receding mandible, then it's going to look like this. But if we get the mother leaning back and we get the baby leaning forward, even with this receding chin, look what happens. We get good juxtaposition. Can you see that? And the baby's head can stay in neutral. Thank you, Al. Okay, thank God we've worked together for 28 years. Okay, lights down again. One last therapeutic thing that we did with this baby that I want to tell you about. No, but we have to... can we turn the lights a little bit more?
The last time I did it,
no, we don't want to do that. Okay. And so we suggested that she do a rolling latch to latch the baby on. And we usually just use a straight latch, which I'll show you later. But in this case, the rolling latch worked better with this baby. So we rolled the breast into the baby's mouth. Okay. Okay. You got to do what works. And here's a regular standard latch, which is what we do most of the time, but we vary it. We'll stand on our head if that's what it takes to get the baby breastfeeding. A C-hold well back on the breast tissue. Tickle the baby's lips. Wait for the baby to open wide, and you just keep tickling until the baby's open wide. And as you're tickling, you say, "Open." I don't care what language it's in. Don't say, "Come on, sweetie pie, please open your mouth for me." One word, firm command. Open. The babies will learn the word very quickly. They're smart. And then ram the baby on. And ram stands for rapid arm motion, because you've got to bring that baby in with grease lightning speed. Ram the baby on. Doesn't hurt. It just is fast. They don't keep the mouths open for more than a split second, so you got to ram them on. Okay, once they've latched in correctly, you cannot shove more in. You got to take them off and start again. Okay, and that's the latch we use most of the time. Okay, and babies love to mimic. They love to mimic, even newborns. And so here we see a mother who's sticking her tongue out and the baby is copying. We see a mother lateralizing her tongue. And the baby copies. This was not scripted. And I love this shot because this was a very young baby and mom was automatically sticking her tongue out to show the baby what to do without being told. Mothers do wondrous things. Okay. Now, this is the real mother. This is the pictures that you've seen before were not the real mother, but this is the real mother, and you can see that she was using another alternative position for babies with receding chins, and this is what we call a lateral prone position. The baby is lying on the mother's side and angled in. The baby is not in a vertical prone, but in a lateral prone, so the baby is next to mom. So the difference is here. I need to show you. I don't think it's... Look, some things you just cannot see as well in slides. A vertical prone is here. The baby is directly vertical to the mother. A lateral prone is here. Okay? It's very comfortable for the mother. Turn the lights down now. Thanks. The mother should have a pillow under her head,
and a pillow under her knees or two, and a pillow along both arms. And then mom and baby are really comfortable. Look at the eye contact there. Isn't that wonderful? If you don't have one of these wonderful little pillows, next best thing is a rolled up towel, and that will work just fine. That's what we used until we came up with the pillows. But the pillow is great. Mom can use it behind her neck too. Stick it in a diaper bag. And the third position for babies with receding chins is a kneeling prone. So again, the baby is angled to come onto the breast. Newborns and young babies really like this. When they start getting a little bit older, they get too tall, and then they have to do a sitting prone. So they have to be on their bottoms. Okay, but this baby, as I said, was doing some arching and doing all kinds of things. I want to mention just one other thing before I go a little further on. And I'm going to skip some stuff because obviously I have to. But most of the studies, 99.99% of the studies that are out there on suck have been done on bottle-fed babies. And basically, I think they belong in the garbage. Every so often, there's a little gleam of something that you might be able to pick up, or an idea or a thread, and run with it. But you can't trust it until you can prove it. Until the research is done on exclusively breastfed babies, we need to be very careful about quoting it, talking about it, using it. Implying that it has any validity at all. Most of it, I think, does not. So there's beginning to be a little bit of research, a couple of articles that have come out now that have looked at just exclusively breastfed babies, and it's fascinating stuff. But most of it out there is not. Okay, now, I saw this mother 10 times total. Or I didn't see her, but she was seen at the Lactation Institute 10 times. I would not have thought that it would have taken that long to bring her around. I think that it was all those weeks and weeks and weeks of the baby bottle feeding, and that the baby was 35 weeks gestation. I think that added to it, so I think his maturity level was not as good. Mom was quite compliant, was lovely to work with, was very well educated, bright woman, very, very lovely to work with. And eventually she did go on and exclusively breastfeed. One of the things that I suggested was that for this arching business, and I never did figure out exactly why the baby was doing that, that she used a sling a lot. And he fought the sling and fought the sling and fought the sling and then gave into it, and it worked wonders. So I had to keep pushing it. Another thing that I did with her that I almost always do is I encouraged her to go to the Leche League. And usually when I'm working with a mother in crisis like this, it takes lots of reminding, several visits worth of reminding that the Leche League will prove helpful to them. And almost always I get positive feedback. I suggested that her family do cooking for her during this period. I can't read it.
30 minutes.
Thank you. That the family do lots of cooking for her and help her out. And she had to stay off of dairy. That was another really hard thing for her. Until she gave it up all the way, the baby continued to have problems. And I think once we got her off of dairy and we worked a lot with the sling and we did the suck training and we fed the baby at breast and at finger, initially more at finger and a little bit at breast, and then eventually we weaned her off the finger and to just the breast, and then we weaned away from the periodontal syringe, it took 10 visits, which is a lot. And she continued to need to use these alternate positions because he had quite a receding chin. Another thing that we dealt with a little bit down toward the end, and I didn't give her all of these therapy treatments at the same time, therapeutic treatments. They were slowly given over a period of time. For example, it wasn't until the 4th follow-up that I started to see that the baby was doing some negative sucking. He hadn't been doing it before because he hadn't been sucking enough. And so we had to work on that. Another big thing that we had to work on was getting the nipple into the mouth to the S spot past the bubble, because the bubble was so big. and that took lots of extra work. Yeah. Yes.
How long a period of time?
Usually once a week. The last couple of visits I did every other week in order to begin to wean her off. She was ready for that. It wasn't a forced weaning. It was a gradual weaning with love.
Weaning from you, not from the baby.
No, weaning, not weaning the baby, weaning from me and the Lactation Institute. She needed to graduate. And we do give them a graduation certificate at the end. They love it. When a baby is sucking properly, the cheeks pooch out. As opposed to what you see here in this baby, where the baby has a dimple, that's a negative suck. And it means that the baby's doing something wrong. So if you see any dimpling, it's a red flag. Negative suck. Okay? You want to see the cheeks pooching out. That's why they have these gorgeous buckle cheeks. The buckle muscles, I mean, get like pouches. And you can actually see the outline of this baby's buckle muscle here. And what you want to see when you see a correct suck is a very gentle oval motion that makes the ears wiggle. You don't see much jawing. Okay, you just see a little bit of movement. This way, let's do it like that. A little bit. And it's not the jaw that's leading, it's the tongue. The jaw follows the tongue, not the reverse. On follow-up 9, which would have been the 10th visit, I did teach the mother how to use a cup, how to cup feed, just in case she needed to be away from the baby so that she wouldn't revert to a bottle. I don't generally teach cup feeding for a baby who has a sucking problem. I teach cup feeding to the working mother when the baby needs an occasional something other than the mother's breast. If the baby's got a sucking problem and they're given cups, I think they're more likely to aspirate. So it's not a tool that I use for babies in trouble. But I did teach her how to cup feed. And there are a variety of cups on the market. You can use anything from the Infa cup, which you saw in the last slide, to the Flexi cup, which is a cup that's designed for kids who have feeding problems, to a medicine cup, which doesn't work as well because it doesn't hold as much except for the preemie, to a Tupperware bowl. It all works. A juice glass works the best. Actually, a juice-sized glass. And plastic works better than anything else, so if the kid hits it, it's not going to break. But I did want to mention the Paladai, this cup from India, that is a traditional cup that's been used for a couple thousand years in India. And they still use it in the NICUs today. And they use it exactly the same way I use a periodontal syringe. So it goes into the corner of the baby's mouth, and the milk is dribbled into the mouth. And so when I found that out, I thought, great minds think alike. Okay, I think that's the last slide on this mother. Yes, can you change to the next tray? Yes, I do want to talk about the sibling for just a minute. 20 months later, same mother had another baby. This baby had a receding chin and a bubble palate also, no surprise. But neither were quite as bad as baby D's. So the chin was not as receding. The bubble was larger than reference, but not huge like baby D's. And she got in when the baby was 8 days old. She said in the hospital, this baby's not sucking right, and they told her, no, go home, your nipples will toughen up. And she knew the baby wasn't sucking right, so she got in, and you can see that her nipples with baby K are already sore, they were already bleeding, and she knew she was in trouble, and so she got in just very quickly. And it only took a couple of visits, and she was graduated. Okay, can you see where the tissue's breaking down already? Here. Here and then over here. And it took a long time before we could put baby D into a cradle hold. He needed the holds for receding chin, but baby K could go into a cradle hold fairly easily, even though she had the receding chin and the bubble palate. And the positions are really not for the bubble. The positions are really for the chin. But she was able to use a transition hold or cradle hold and didn't have to go to the alternative holds exclusively. She did use them. Okay. I think it took 3 visits and she was graduated. And by the 3rd visit, we were just doing some brush-up stuff. Now, the reason I picked these 3 cases is because they all had palatal variations and they all had receding chins. And so I thought one of the things that would be interesting is to look at these cases and see how they differed, how we have some of the same problems, but how they differ. So this is baby J, and mom is TW. The mother was referred to me by a league leader, and the mother complained of mastitis in her right breast and blisters on both her nipples. Baby was 2 weeks old, and she'd had 20 hours of excruciating back labor to an epidural to episiotomy to vaginal birth. All 3 had vaginal births. All 3 were primips. And I just gave you the second baby with Mama S G, but with the first baby, baby D, she was primip, obviously. All 3 had antibiotics during their hospital stay. So the mother stated that she'd taken a breastfeeding class and she thought breastfeeding was going fine. But she had problems when she had only colostrum and the baby was ravenously hungry. She'd been told to feed the baby on request, but she felt like she was a human pacifier. She felt his suck was way too strong. Her milk didn't come in until the 4th day. Red flag. And she became very engorged and had latch-on difficulties. Engorgement is not normal. Engorgement is pathologic. Breast fullness is normal. The baby was so fussy that the mother didn't insist on proper latch-on while the baby was fussy because she was hungry. He was hungry. And her nipples were extremely sore. And the RN in the pediatrician's office came to visit her at the end of the 1st week and gave her a pump and style. Thought she was giving her a good pump. And I am going to name specific equipment here so that you understand what we're dealing with. That's a good pump. It's just not appropriate for a mother who's in trouble, in my opinion. And before that, she had an even flow, which is much worse. She'd been pumping every 2 hours and bottle feeding. Baby was 2 weeks old when I met him. She was again Caucasian with medium brown hair. That's something else they all 3 had in common. And the mother was sleep deprived. She felt like she was under a lot of stress. And dad was the only help at home. That was true in all 3 cases. Dad was the only help at home. She said there were no known allergies for mother or father, but her family had a lot of history of allergy. She had thyroid problems and was on Synthroid. She had seen the MD just before coming to see us. The MD did not take cultures of her breasts, but he did massage the heck out of them, which put her up on the ceiling, she said. She had been taking Keflex 500 milligrams QID for half a week, but he had just changed her prescription. She had not yet started the new drug, which was Dicloxacillin 500 milligrams QID for 10 days. She had had breast growth during pregnancy. She again had Playboy-shaped breasts. And I said I would show you different breast shapes. So here we go. You should excuse the expression. We call this the saggy breast. But this is the breast we want when we've had children. There is a place in Africa where the women, the young girls, the teenagers walk around and pound their breasts because they're all undressed from the waist up so everybody can see their breasts. And they all want to have saggy breasts because that's a sign of wisdom. That's where I'm going when I retire. An experienced breast, a wise breast. I like wise even better than experienced. So in any case, these are the two that we see in most women who have mature breasts, but we can see any of these. This is more likely to be seen in a pubescent girl, but we can see mature women who breastfeed very successfully with very little breast tissue. And in some cultures, for example, in Japan, we see a lot more women with very small breasts and breastfeed just as well as those who are well endowed, if not better. And I'm trying to see if somebody's in the room. I'm not going to embarrass her. Okay. But we do see across populations women with very small breasts who breastfeed just beautifully. This particular mom had extra large nipples. Now, a good way to tell whether nipples are small or large is compare them to the currency, the coins in your culture. And her nipples were between nickel and quarter in diameter. And they were half inch in length. Those are very big diameter nipples. And she'd been using a standard pump flange. It doesn't work. And this was the real mother. Look at her nipples. She had nipples that I have never seen before or since. It looked like somebody had taken a paste made with flour and water and a little bit of green food dye, so it looked like pus, and some sand, because it was kind of sandy, grainy, gritty, and coated her nipples and areolas. It was the strangest stuff I've ever seen. Bleeding. And her doctor didn't culture them. Now, somebody up there watches out for... No, I want to say about the flanges again. Medela now makes extra large and extra... they make standard, small, standard... extra large and extra, extra large, or whatever they call them. But she needed the smaller of the extra large flanges, and this is what worked just beautifully for her. I started to say somebody up there was watching out for me, because this was a very, very unusual consult in many ways. And I will share with you my problem consults as well as the good consults, always. And this was a problem consult from start to finish. Not only were her nipples unusual and breasts, she had bilateral mastitis, no question about it. She had podo-orange skin, where you could see the Cooper's ligaments dimpling the skin of her breast. But the reason I say somebody up there was watching over me is because we always have students. We rarely do consults without students. We are a lab school. We train our students who are working on their master's degree, their bachelor's degree, or postgraduate training in our clinic as well as in classroom. They have a 900-hour clinical requirement. And that particular month, Bob Sears... and he's here speaking at the conference, son of Bill Sears, was a pediatric resident in his last year of residency, and he had asked if he could come spend a month with me, which was really an honor for me, because I thought, well, coming from that home, he should know a lot. Now, I don't know why I thought that, because I can look at my own son and say, he needs to learn a lot still. But in any case, he was spending a month with me. So the hands you see on the breast doing a direct pressure massage are Bob Sears' hands. And thank God he was there, and you'll see why in a couple of minutes. So just take a couple looks at pictures of her breast. This is her nipple in an extra large flange. And again, her baby had a receding chin. And her baby's bubble was closer to reference. Little bit larger than reference, okay? This is the S spot. And again, this is not the same baby, but I just want to show you one more time doing a digital suck assessment. Stroke the baby's cheek. This is a failure to thrive little girl, you can see. And stroke around her gums. She's already done her lips. Now she's doing her gums. And the baby's saying, I don't know if I like this. But only for a few seconds. We just caught that picture. And then she's saying, this is not so bad. And then she's got her finger back to the S spot. And she hadn't had a nipple in her mouth that far, so it took her a minute to get used to it, but she was quite happy for several minutes, sucking away, smiling. You can see the look in her eyes, saying, this is pretty interesting. And then after a while, this is what typically happens. They get this look on their face that Sandy Patton calls the Beethoven look, because she says every statue of Beethoven looks like this. And what she's saying is, I'm doing all this work and nothing's coming out. Okay, so that's basic suck assessment again. Fingers got to be back to the S spot. And this is Bob's hand doing a direct pressure massage. Now, when the breast is mastitic, we don't do a usual massage. We only do direct pressure massage. And it is painful. So it's got to be done very slowly and very gently. The mother has to be willing to have it done to her. She can't do it to herself because it's too painful, usually with very rare exception. And what you do is you start at the periphery of the breast. Like this. And start back behind where the plugs or the mastitis is. And slowly build pressure. And build pressure. And build pressure, no movement. And you just keep increasing the pressure and increasing the pressure and increasing the pressure until you can't push any more because your fingers are aching. And then you just hold it. And if it's too painful, let up a little bit, not all the way. Give the mother a break and then start pushing more pressure again. Okay? And then after you've held it for seconds to a minute, then you very slowly release that spot. Slowly, slowly, slowly. I'm doing this faster than we normally do it. Wiggle your fingers and start on the next spot. He was supporting the breast as he was doing it, and I had to hold the mic. She said he was supporting the breast on one side, so normally we would do it like this, just to hold the breast to give it counter pressure and then push it. And it can take an hour to do the breast, one breast. It's a long process because you've got to do it very slowly. Now, here's where the consult veered. Yes? The point is to get the breast cleared, to get the milk draining. Oh, yes. It gets the milk flowing. Absolutely gets the milk flowing. Is this the same type of thing that you do for your sinuses? I don't know about sinuses. I only know about breasts. That's the truth. I don't know. You're teaching me. Come do what you do for sinuses on me, and then I'll tell you afterwards. Okay, here's what really threw us. I started to teach the father how to feed the baby with a periodontal syringe because her breasts clearly were too far gone to put the baby on the breast. She was in too much pain. So we had to pump her breasts and do a direct pressure massage and get her going on the antibiotics and let that take effect for a little bit, finger feed the baby, so that the baby learned to take the nipple all the way to the S spot. The finger feeding does two things, or does several things, but two main things. It feeds the baby while it's training the baby, patterning the baby to take the nipple in all the way to the S spot. So that it's an easier transition because of it. I know the finger is hard, I know it's not the breast, but it's the best thing I've come up with so far to make that transition as fast as we can. And again, remember, I want to get the baby breastfeeding. So the father very easily learned how to finger feed and then all of a sudden started screaming at me. And this is why I was so glad Bob was there. I needed a man in the room. He asked me what the purpose of the finger feeding was, and I explained it to him, as I always do. But then he exploded, and he said to his wife, let's get out of here. He wasn't screaming at me. He said, let's get out of here. This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Then he calmed down, and he watched while I finger fed the baby easily. Then he asked to try again. And then he did it again with no trouble, and then he exploded again. I've never seen anything like it. So I've never seen anything like the nipples, and I've never seen anything like the father. And this time it was worse. He was screaming at his wife. He said, put on your clothes and let's get out of here now. I calmly stated that they could bottle feed if they needed to, but I wanted to be sure that his wife's breast needs were taken care of, that she was knew how to pump and drain her breasts, or she was going to get worse. And then he yelled at me. This was the first time he directed at me, and he said, do you think I'm not taking care of my wife? What do we do to get out of here? So I said, pay the bill. And he went out to pay the bill. The mother was crying. She asked me to show her how to finger feed. I asked if she really wanted to try, given her husband's mood. She said she did, but the baby was already full at that point, and she was so upset. She was crying and terribly upset. And I just stopped the lesson. I said, you know what? I'm going to see you in 2 days. Bottle feed for a couple more days. The baby's been bottle fed. We'll fix it in a couple of days when things have calmed down. And I started cleaning up and packing up the room. The mother apologized to me for the husband's outburst. She said that his mother had died 3 weeks before, and she'd never seen him like that before. And then when he came back into the room, he apologized and said, it's nothing you did, really. It's nothing you did. Okay. I was real glad Bob was there. I've never had anything like that before. I suggested that the mother pump every 2 hours, but I didn't cover all the pumping instructions that I usually do because he was so anxious to get out of there. And as they were walking out the door, he spotted cold packs, and even though I talked to him about how to make pea flowers, flowers with frozen peas to use on the breast for cold, he didn't want to hear about that. He wanted to buy the cold packs, so he stopped and bought the cold packs. It was really strange. When I saw them 2 days hence, I planned to see them in a couple more days because 2 days hence was weekend, and the mother called in tears, and so I said, okay, I would meet her at the office, but I called up Bob and I said, how'd you like to do a consult on a Sunday? And thank God, he drove in, bless him, and was there with me because I was afraid I could have a battle. I just didn't know what this father was like, and I didn't want to be alone. And as it turned out, the father didn't even come. But the mother came for 4 or 5 consults. She ended up giving up because she got everything cleared up. We were starting to get the baby on the breast. Everything was going well, and then she started to have another round of mastitis. And that threw her. But I'd like to suggest to you that I think she didn't have good help in the house. This father was in a state, whether that was a normal state or not a normal state, I don't know. But he was certainly in a state. And I do want to tell you what I said to the doctor about this mother. Because when I called the doctor, I talked about all of the following with her. First of all, I suggested culturing the milk and culturing the blisters. And treating for... I think sometimes we need to treat for yeast and bacterial infections at the same time. And I thought that this was probably one of those times. And so I discussed that with the doctor. And the doctor did prescribe an antibacterial cream and an antifungal cream. I talked to the doctor about the father's very unusual outburst because I wasn't sure they would ever come back. And I wanted somebody responsible to watch because I was worried this could even be an abused mother. So it was just a red flag for me, and I wanted that watched. I suggested that the doctor watch for strep because bilateral mastitis is a red flag for strep. I talked about finger feeding and why we finger feed as opposed to bottle feeding. I talked about the mother needing to pump even if she wanted to stop breastfeeding until this was cleared up and why. I suggested that she needed to watch for cancer. The mother's secretions on follow-up visit were lumpy, mucousy, thick, plugs of milk, enough so that I could photograph it. I've seen it a few times, but it's pretty unusual, and I know that sometimes when things get really weird inside of a breast, it's a precursor. So again, not that she was going to get cancer, but the doctor should watch out for it. And I'm talking about 10 years hence, 15 years hence. She probably won't stay with the same doctor, but in any case, there were things I wanted him to watch for. And I did talk a little bit about my experience level and how unusual some of the situation was with this mother. Okay, let's just look at her breast. Finger feeding. Anytime we teach finger feeding, we show it. We help them learn it. That's what you're seeing here. Then we let them do it and get a return demonstration. Okay, this is the Monoject. This is a periodontal syringe. We now have a syringe tip that goes on the syringe so that you don't have to worry about it being sharp anymore. As I said earlier, all syringes are not the same. This is a syringe that comes from Japan. It doesn't hold anywhere near as much. This is a periodontal syringe by Monoject. They're not the same. Even the curved tip was not the same. This is an ice flower made with ice. Now we usually say make them with frozen peas. Okay, so just some shots of finger feeding. And this is the mother's nipple again. Anybody here ever seen anything like it? And remember, it's green. Pale green. This is a follow-up visit. This is not even the initial visit. I didn't take pictures at the initial visit. And they were much better by 2 days. This is a close-up. You can see the pot of orange skin really easily here.
So, do you know what that was exactly?
They did culture it finally, and they said it was staph infection and a couple of other things, not strep. Okay, when the baby started breastfeeding, it caused a crease in the nipple, and again, that's a red flag. The nipple should look the same when it comes out of the mouth as when it goes in. Okay, the suck training is the same as finger feeding except without food. Good flanged lips. Now we've added the syringe, braced against the finger, going in the corner of the mouth, just a tiny bit of the syringe. Okay, this is the third visit. You can see how they're improving. Not gone, and this is again just a couple days later. Scab had just fallen off in the shower before coming. Okay, I'm going to talk you through the third visit very fast. Third visit, baby had again the palatal problems, but the baby also had a prominent superior alveolar ridge. You know what? That's the grandmother. Can you switch to the next one and let me see if I can just find that slide real fast? Thanks, Kay. One of those slides I showed was Kay's. Thank you, Kay. The channel palette slide was Kay's.
Can you explain the alveolar ridge?
Yes, I want to show you. That's why I want to show you real fast with just the one slide. Okay, you know what? Let's wait and we'll talk after. I do want to hear. This mother, the baby had a tight lingual frenulum in addition to the palatal problem, in addition to the receding chin, and in addition to the prominent superior alveolar ridge. Now, can you put the one on where they're all the same? And then what I want you to be thinking about is how I could handle things similarly and differently. They all had to have periodontal syringes. They all had to have positional changes because they all had receding chins. But the length of time things took and how I related to each mother was quite different because of the situations. This one also had bilateral mastitis. Is it on? Okay, lights out. Okay, now you know what? I need to cover this too. This mother's had bilateral mastitis, but she, on palpation, I could feel that an abscess was forming. and I've never seen this in any of the literature, but if you just catch it before it's this walled-off body of pus, and you do a direct pressure massage and pump the breasts and drain the breasts, or get the baby on right, which you usually can't do in this situation because you got to suck drain the baby first. So pump the mother. You can catch it and drain the breast before you get an abscess. And that's what happened with this mother. It's like you can feel the walls forming of the abscess, and an abscess feels kind of like a tennis ball, but it's not totally enclosed yet. And so you can see right in here where this mother had right here the beginning of an abscess, and this is the next day where it was already clearing up because we caught it. And so that's what happened with this third case also. This is a prominent superior alveolar ridge. It's the long gum line. And again, you have to have positional changes of the baby in order to accommodate this variation in anatomy. So because of all these anatomical variations, we had lots of similarities and lots of differences that mandated that we treat things differently and uniquely for each mother and baby. Thank you all.